And welcome to our live Q&A with Nurse Maria Nyland, who's the nurse in charge and the public health nurse in Dawson City. Been there for 24 years, Maria?
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time. You're now a UConner, right?
Thank you.
So our purpose for this Q&A today is just to answer any questions about the Pfizer vaccine that is going to be available for youth age 12 to 17. So we have quite a few questions that have come in, and I'm just going to give you an opportunity to say a few welcoming remarks before we get started with the questions.
Thank you, Mithia. I'm really happy to be with you all today and privileged to, and so happy to be able to live here in the traditional territory of the Chonakwichin. It's been my privilege to get to know many of this community over time and watch children born and end up raising their own children here in Dawson. So it's a great privilege and happy to be joining you today and hope we can answer some questions and concerns that some of you might have.
Wonderful. And thank you for reminding where you're from, which traditional territory you're in. I'm zooming in from the traditional territories of the Kwamandan First Nation and the Ta'an Kwachan Council. So very pleased to have your expertise to answer all these questions that have come in. And I know one of the biggest ones, because we've been dealing with the Moderna vaccine, and I know we've had a Q&A session before on the Moderna vaccine. There are questions about what's going on with Pfizer, because it's new. It's new to UConn. It's new to being administered to youth. And I just want to give you an opportunity to discuss with us what the mRNA vaccine is and how it works.
Sure.
So I'm going to put the image up on the screen and we can have you describe what is happening here.
Sure, thanks, Mithia. So Moderna and Pfizer are both mRNA vaccines. mRNA stands for messenger ribonucleic acid. It's just a very fancy way to describe a very tiny part of a virus. And there's actually mRNA in all of our body's cells. mRNA is a recipe to show, or a building plan to show how to build things. And so for coronavirus, it has its own mRNA, and Moderna and Pfizer both use mRNA to deliver information to our bodies so we can develop immunity. So in the picture, we can see a picture of the coronavirus there at the top with the purple spiky stuff sticking out. You may have heard people referring to the spike protein of the COVID-19 virus. That's those purple parts there. And when the companies that make the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines were looking at using their technology, the mRNA platform, for the coronavirus vaccine, they had to get the genetic sequence. So the next little bit you see, it looks like a DNA strand. It's to illustrate the mRNA, the building plan or the recipe for the spike protein itself. So this is only telling our body about the spike protein. When Pfizer and Moderna put their vaccine together, they took that mRNA sequence and put it into a circle of lipids or fats and coated it with that. So here's where Pfizer and Moderna are just a tiny bit different. The coating that Pfizer uses is a little bit different than the Moderna coating, but they're made basically of the same types of lipids. Polyethylene glycol is one of those, and we talk about that a little bit later when we talk about allergies. Cholesterol is another part of the Pfizer lipid coating. Then you can see the vial next. So these coated particles are in a vial of vaccine. And when we immunize someone, we take a part of that vial and we inject it into our bodies, into a muscle. Then the vaccine is taken into our cells. So the lipid coating that's been around this mRNA enables the vaccine to enter our body's cells in a similar way to how a COVID-19 virus itself would enter our cells. When we get infected with COVID-19, the virus enters our cells and actually kind of hijacks our body cells and says, now you're going to make coronavirus viruses, and we're going to multiply many, many times. So in infection, that's what happens. For vaccine, we only are told how to make the spike protein. We don't get the information about how to make the whole virus. So that's why the vaccines, both Pfizer and Moderna, cannot give us COVID-19. They only deliver information about the spike protein. So then you can see the first big circle that is illustrating our body's cell. Inside that cell now, the mRNA, that squiggly line with the green and blue spikes off of it, that's the recipe inside the cell, and it's telling a body's cell how to make the spike protein. So you can see them being made there in the cell. And then it starts sticking the spike proteins out on the outside. So the last step for developing immunity to COVID-19 is our body starts making antibodies. It looks at that spike protein that our cells have produced and says, that's not somebody we like. This is an enemy. We need to make something that's going to fight off this enemy. And so in the pink, you can see antibodies are being made that are going to be able to respond to spike proteins of the coronavirus. So in this way, our body learns how to recognize our enemy, the COVID-19 virus, by recognizing the spike proteins that stick all around the outside of the virus. Thanks, Mathia.
Thank you. So I think it's really important to reiterate the fact that these vaccines are not giving us or delivering the actual virus. It's just teaching our bodies how to respond to that spike protein.
That's exactly
so awesome. So there's a lot of information on TikTok or on social media around this altering our DNA. Because it's an mRNA strand, does it alter our DNA?
It does not. mRNA is just that recipe or pattern for making the spike protein. It actually does not enter our DNA at all. In our cell, the DNA is in the center, in a nucleus, and that's inside the cell, but the mRNA only enters the outside kind of jelly that's around the nucleus. So it cannot alter our DNA at all. It only delivers the recipe for making the spike protein and does not change our DNA in any way. In the same way, even viruses that enter our cell and communicate, they don't change our DNA.
Right. Thank you. So you touched a little bit on the differences between Moderna and Pfizer. Do you have any more differences? Like, is there anything else that we should know about besides the types of fats?
That really is the most significant difference in the two vaccines. The reason that there are storage differences between the two vaccines is because of the stability of that coating. So that helps us understand why, at this point anyway, Pfizer's instructions are that it must be stored between minus 60 and minus 80 degrees Celsius up to a certain point. We have some opportunities to thaw it, but we need to be very careful to use it in the same way that they tell us to. Moderna can be stored at minus 20. So that is one difference in storage, but it really is about that coating and its stability.
And that was one of the deciding factors for us in the North and remote communities in Canada getting the Moderna was because of its transportability.
That's right. We already had freezers in Dawson, at least, and in most of our other communities in Yukon that could store Moderna already, where Pfizer would have taken a lot of, more work at getting special freezers to each community. And so this Moderna has been much easier to use in that way.
Mm-hmm. There is questions around how the vaccine will impact fertility. And do you want to address that?
I know there's been concerns out there and talk about that. And there is no biological reason that Moderna or Pfizer or any of the other COVID vaccines that are used should be affecting fertility in any way. There were not pregnant women included in studies at the beginning with Pfizer and Moderna because that's the standard. We don't include pregnant women in those types of studies. But there were women that did get pregnant during the study, and there were no red flags of safety at all. And now the vaccine has been given to many, many people, and in places where we have had lots of COVID circulating in the world, pregnant women have chosen to get immunized, and we have not had any concerns flagged after that, that there's been any problems with those at all.
Right. And just around kind of the side effects, what side effects will youth expect? Are there any long-term effects that we know of?
We don't know of any long-term effects from the COVID-19 vaccines at all. They've been watching, of course, and we're monitoring those. But I'll speak first to the side effects that might happen right after injection or right after vaccination. With any immunization, when we give an injection in the muscle may become sore for a period of time afterwards. It's very common for immunizations to sometimes have a bit of a fever afterwards. But with Pfizer, I was just doing some reading on what types of side effects are most common. And it seems like fatigue and headache are actually the most common for Pfizer. And we see that those rates of side effects are just a little stronger in youth that are 12 to 17 because your immune system is so much stronger when you're younger. So as we get older, our immune systems get a little bit more calmed down and a little weaker. And so the side effects when we stimulate the immune system tend to also be a little bit less strong. So youth can expect after a first dose that they will probably feel a little bit tired after their first dose of Pfizer vaccine and perhaps get a headache as well. After second doses, there will be a few more people that will notice that. There are a few more people that develop fever after second doses, but that number is actually a little less than Moderna. So I think we're probably going to see less side effects as far as the fever goes from the Pfizer vaccine with the youth. With Moderna, we saw a fair bit of achiness too, and that also doesn't seem to be quite as strong with the Pfizer vaccine. But any of those side effects really are our body just illustrating how our immune system is responding. And it doesn't mean that there's harm being done. It really just tells us that our immune system is doing what it's supposed to do and respond to the vaccine.
It's acting strong. You've got a strong immune response. So that's good. Do we know about any long-term effects at this point?
We have not had any real concerns about serious long-term effects at all. They continue to monitor people who have gotten Moderna, Pfizer vaccines. I know with AstraZeneca, there's a lot of talk about the clot issue as well. We're not using AstraZeneca currently in UConn. And there are that's a whole nother discussion that we'll save for another time. But with Pfizer and Moderna, we aren't seeing any long-term complications from the vaccine, but we continue to monitor these vaccines for sure. There is a way in UConn that we report things that people are telling us that have happened afterwards. The things that have been reported to me have been things that have not been a long-lasting so far, but we will continue to monitor things because in UConn, we've been giving it since, late January, I think. And Moderna and Pfizer are required by Health Canada to monitor their vaccine for 2 years afterwards. So they will continue to report to Health Canada what they are seeing with their studies. So people that started back last summer, it's been already almost a year since they received their first doses, and they will continue to give data to Health Canada and other countries about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this virus is so new to us, and it's amazing that we have in UConn two vaccines that are available for our population. There has been quite a few questions around, are our kids being made guinea pigs? And has there been enough testing on this vaccine? And how long have they been testing? I know that's a Health Canada thing, but you can touch on that.
So the thing I would start with is the mRNA research has been going on for about 20 years. So they have been looking at this type of platform for quite a long time. So it's not brand new, just started since the COVID pandemic.
And it has been used previously, like it's been in use.
It has been used in studies. It's not been used widely, but they were looking at using it for Ebola, for Zika. So they have done studies in humans with mRNA vaccinations before COVID was given. And then last year, after the genetic sequencing was provided to both Moderna and Pfizer, they were able to very quickly create their vaccine because they already had ingredients and things ready to go. And they started doing studies. I know Pfizer, the date is July of last year. And at that time, they did include youth that were 16 and to 18. So we would have the 16 and 17 year olds who had already received immunization with Pfizer as of last July. There were about 1,100 youth. This was actually from 12 to 15. 1,100 youth, this started in October then, were given the Pfizer vaccine. And then they also had 1,100 youth that got the placebo at that time. And they studied them starting in October. And then by early 2021, I believe it was, they had some data to submit to Health Canada about that. And since that time, in UK, maybe they were the ones that started off using Pfizer, there would have been 16-year-olds in the UK that received Pfizer vaccine already starting in maybe December or January. So they have already been using this vaccine in other youth in other places for sure. Northwest Territories, I think, was the first one off in Canada. And it's been about a month, I believe. And I have not heard of concerns from
and Manitoba as well, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. There was a question about the size of the needles. Are these big needles?
You know what? I tell people I use the exact same size needle as I do for a 2-month-old baby. So, it's very, very tiny. My experience with Moderna vaccination has been that people hardly feel it. There are occasions where sometimes a nerve might be close by and get some pressure and get some pain there. But this is one of the most painless immunizations I have given for Moderna. And I don't have experience with Pfizer, but I suspect it will be very similar. And it's a smaller amount actually going in for Pfizer.
Here, my gran, who is 92, she was like, "Did you do it already?"
Yep.
she didn't even feel it. It was pretty cute.
Yeah. Quite a few people say that to me. And I distract them with a little talking, and before they know it, it's all done.
I think we have another question here around, it's a little bit different than school immunizations. It's that consent piece. Can you describe or walk us through what is happening with the consent for the 12 to 17 year olds?
Sure. So when we do immunizations in school, we often send consent forms home to parents so they can read. I know that Yukon government is working on some documents so that parents can read some things about the vaccination and about the consent process. And if it's not up already on the Yukon.ca website, it will be shortly for folks to read. This is not being presented as a school program. So in rural communities, many of these clinics will be happening at a school space, but we're not using the school as a place to deliver, like through the Department of Education. So communication will be coming to parents, possibly in emails, definitely on the Yukon.ca website. And when someone comes to the clinic, we would encourage youth to come with their parent if possible. We like to have that conversation with both the youth and the parent. We advise youth to, talk about it with their parents ahead of time, find out more about the vaccine, decide in your family what your plan is. We will be talking to people at the clinics and making sure that they understand the risks and the benefits of the vaccine. It's our responsibility to do that. That's what consent is informed consent, not just assumed consent. We make sure that whoever is consenting understands exactly what's going on. There in the Yukon, there is an opportunity for youth to make consent for themselves for immunization. It's called mature minor consent. And there's not an age set with that because we want to make sure that each youth really truly understands what they're consenting to. Our preference is that they would be consenting along with their parent and that this is a family event. But the youth do have the opportunity to make consent for themselves if they choose to do so. They would also have the opportunity to refuse the immunization if they chose to do so. So that's why it's important to have that conversation with your parents ahead of time.
Yes, and I think that was, so Department of Education had sent out an email, I think it was on Thursday of last week. So if you or your parent has not received this email, it describes what the Care and Consent Act is and how consent will be approached. So just what you've described there, the sitting down, having answering questions and really ensuring that the recipient, the person who's going to get vaccinated, fully understands what is happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For sure. And it will be our responsibility as immunizers at the clinics to make sure that that consent is in place. And we'll be documenting that as well.
Thank you. So the approach is really to have parents have the conversation, have that sit down, and on the email, there are some resources that you can walk through. And I know through One UConn, we are working with Health and Social Services to come up with additional resources that can help with those conversations. And really talk it through, but it is up to the individual, the 12 to 17 year old youth, to make the decision about whether they want to receive this. And yeah, if as a parent, what would you give those advice to those parents who have children on the younger scale, maybe the 12 to 15 year olds who need that support?
So I think it helps if a child can understand what we certainly have all heard about the pandemic. So communicating how we protect each other as a community is important. We know that children generally don't have a severe illness to COVID-19. So the vaccination for younger kids is really also about protecting our community and not sharing with each other. We do, however, know that sometimes children do get severe infection from COVID, and we know that there are actually long-term effects for COVID infection that could last a long, long time. So we are concerned that we do need to protect the health of our kids. You know, we've seen some of these outbreaks happen in Northwest Territory in schools as well, and we certainly don't want to see that happening in UConn. So that's one of the reasons too, I think, that we were just really eager to be able to offer immunization to the youth when we can. I was encouraging the students here at Robert Service School in Dawson to that they can book an appointment and come to the clinic without having made their decision yet. That can be an opportunity again to find out more instead of saying, oh, I'm booking my appointment, I have decided. So you don't need to feel like you're completely decided in order to attend the clinic. We would encourage parents to come with their kids and have that talk with the nurse that's offering the immunization. And don't feel badly if you come and you're just not quite ready to make that decision. There will be more opportunity in the future when Moderna is approved, and we'll touch a little bit on that later. I thought, Mathia, maybe I would just walk through what the clinic might look like. Is that okay?
Yes, because there are some questions coming in about children or youth that are hesitant or scared of needles. Will they have to get the needles in front of all their friends? In a big room, yeah. So I think that is definitely a concern that's out there.
Yeah, I understand that completely. So we are setting up our clinics in Whitehorse. It will be at the convention center. So if adults have already visited the convention center, that's the space it's in. There are some privacy kind of screens at those tables, so they can be hidden a little bit. And I think that there is opportunity there as well for someone to request a little bit more privacy. You could ask there at the convention center if about that when you are registering. In the rural communities, we're often going to be using a school space like the gym. I think in one place it's the library. So we think that there'll be some opportunity if someone really needs some privacy that we can find a little space out to the side. But generally, it's going to look like our COVID vaccine clinics have looked like before, where there's tables set up and people. But we'll be spacing apart, and we'll try to be as kind and gentle and welcoming as we can be. So there was one question about, you know, do I have to go with my student? You don't have to. But we encourage a parent to attend if possible. If your work schedule doesn't allow for that and you're fairly confident that your child can receive their immunization without you present, that's okay. If the consent is an issue and you're needing to consent for your child, and especially if your child is a little younger and maybe not ready to do that consent on their own, you can send a note with your child saying, "I consent." But we'd also encourage you to send maybe a phone number with your child. So if we do feel like we need to touch base with you, that we can reach you by phone at that time during the clinic. Many of the clinics are going to have a little bit later times as well. So an after school time in Dawson, school's actually going to be already dismissed. But in other communities where school is still in session, there will be some times for after school appointments. And that may work better for a parent to come and meet their child at that time. When a student's appointment arrives and it's during a school time, it's up to the student and the parent to arrange that with the school office. We won't be going to the school office and paging students to come down. It's really more, it needs to be seen as more of an independent clinic apart from the school. There will be a waiting
period. That's helpful.
And just you know, arranging that ahead of time with the office so they know your student has an appointment, so they know that they're going to be popping out of class, and thinking ahead maybe about an exam schedule if that's the case for wherever your community is headed as far as school schedules go too. Mm-hmm. There's a waiting area ahead of time. You know, the student and the parent will come in and register. It's helpful to bring some ID of some sort with a healthcare number. We'd encourage you to bring your healthcare card. Have your student think about the kind of shirt they're wearing so that they don't have to slip a sleeve off. That gives a bit of privacy as well. And then there'll be a bit of waiting time. Then you see the immunizer, you have your talk about the vaccine. And if you're ready to go, it'll be done. And then there'll be a 15-minute wait afterwards just to make sure that we're with you if you did have an unexpected rare allergy to something with the vaccine. So other than that, it's fairly the same as the adult clinics. The only difference really is that we really would love to see the parents come with the kids.
Mm-hmm. And if your child is afraid of needles, maybe you need to be there too.
And we as nurses who have given immunizations for a long time to lots of 12 to 17 year olds have a few tricks up our sleeve to help people feel more comfortable, and certainly don't anticipate that we're going to be forcing kids that aren't ready emotionally. I would also say, you know, this there is a one-time thing now for Pfizer. But we will be offering Moderna as an immunization when it's authorized for this age group as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the questions: when will the youth immunization be available again in the future? I think that's the answer, hey?
It is, and we don't have dates set for that because we don't know when Health Canada will authorize that for use in that age group, the Moderna product. We do know that it sounds like Moderna is going to be submitting some documents to Health Canada, possibly as early as next week. So we might be seeing Moderna vaccinations offered to the 12 and up, maybe even before school starts this fall. And at that point, we'll just be encouraging them to attend the clinics that are already regularly happening for adults.
Mm-hmm. And this Pfizer vaccine, because it's already approved by Health Canada, being administered to this age group, this just allows us to have a larger population immunization for the summer months as people increase activities as we've just opened up some of our restrictions. So it's a good thing.
I know there's some families that are thinking, okay, now I can get my children immunized and then we can all go somewhere outside of the territory.
Yes, we've been having that conversation as well. So one of the questions the pre-questions was around when would the Moderna vaccine be ready for youth? So we're expecting by the fall.
Probably. I mean, I don't have it. Yeah. You know, things always can change with COVID, but I'm guessing that that's probably what we're going to be looking at. That's what I've been hearing is within the certainly 6 months, I would think.
I think they are in one of the last stages of approval at Health Canada, though, so they're pretty close. Do you have any indication or any knowledge of when we will be able to vaccinate children under the age of 12?
I don't. Moderna had been recruiting for their study for 6 months and up in December, and I don't think that they're finished with that trial yet. But I have not seen the latest out there, but I would just say stay tuned.
Okay, and there was a question about, will we need a booster shot?
I don't know, but I was just talking to Dr. Hanley about that as well. We still need to wait and see how our vaccinations are measuring up against the new variants. And because worldwide we still have lots of COVID circulating, we are probably going to continue to see some new variants popping up here and there. And we've gotten some really great encouraging data out of the UK when they were looking at how Pfizer and Moderna were stacking up against the B117 variant, which is one of the oldest ones now. Still remains to be seen about the P1, the P2, the one that is from South Africa. I think the India one is B167. And we're still waiting to know really how well Pfizer and Moderna are doing against those. So it could be that there will be booster shots. I don't know for sure. I am so encouraged, though, at how effective the COVID-19 mRNA vaccines have been. Much like very, very high effectiveness. We hardly ever see immunizations doing this well. So it's great news. And I hope that that will actually bode well for the future as well. The other really neat thing about mRNA vaccines is that if we do need booster shots, they will be able to produce those very quickly because they'll just need to redo the genetic sequencing and reformulate an immunization. It takes a lot of time though to deliver this number of vaccines to populations. So it's not a matter of days, but it's encouraging that we'll be able to adjust things as needed.
Yeah. Maybe we should describe, because we haven't really gone over that yet, the rollout of this clinic. So we talked about it, it's being delivered in the schools, it's being delivered by health and social services. Do you want to cover how the clinic first dose and the second doses are rolling out?
Sure. So I know Dawson's dates much better than the other communities, and I don't have that up in front of me right now, but I know that that's starting very soon. I can't remember which communities first.
I think, let's see, which one was first? Faro is first on May 31st.
Okay.
And then Dawson, June 10th. And these are only delivered on the one day, right?
That's right. So for the rural communities, there will be a team of 4 to 5 people that are arriving in each community. Pfizer, because it's packaging, it's freezing, it's transportation is very special, even more so than Moderna. That's the only way it will be given in the communities is with this mobile team. And they'll arrive, they'll set up for their clinic, and they'll give it that one day. If in that community, a youth isn't able or ready to attend that clinic for the first dose, they can choose to travel to another community for their first dose. But if you don't get a first dose and you feel and you weren't ready until dose number two comes around, unfortunately, you won't be able to get Pfizer as dose two. We really need to do dose one and then dose two, and that will be the only way opportunity to get the Pfizer. For those kids, though, that aren't ready yet or their parents aren't ready yet and they have that discussion, they can plan to get an immunization maybe later with Moderna. So right. Coordinating those dose ones in different communities, you'll just need to be cautious. If you do choose to go to a different community, you'll need to think through where am I going to get dose two and what the timing would be.
Mm-hmm. And we'll put the link to the schedule in the comments so everybody can look up where their community schedule is. And it's so important for people to book their appointment online in advance. And I think Whitehorse has a larger time frame. So we were told if you did not get your vaccination in the community, you will be covered by insured health through Yukon government or non-insured health benefits through Health Canada or NIHB to travel from your community to Whitehorse to get your first dose. So the first dose clinics in Whitehorse are from June 1st to June 18th. Second dose clinics are June 23rd to July 13th. So the last community or the last date for in a community is July 14th for the vaccination. I believe that is Ross River. So Ross River's dates have changed. The first date is June 23rd and the second date is July 14th.
And if you don't want to travel to Whitehorse, you, I believe, can choose to book into another rural community and get that type of travel covered as well. Mm-hmm. If you'd rather travel a shorter distance.
Yeah, so there is a lot of support. It just is a matter of booking your appointment so that we can plan to have or help the vaccine rollout team can plan to have the required doses in the community.
That's right.
Question.
Let me just add to that booking. You know, booking is really very helpful for the clinics to plan ahead. If you don't have the ability to book online and you need help with that, the rural health centers can help you book an appointment. There's also a number to call on the website for help with booking appointments. So please feel free to do that. We want to make sure that it's available as we can make it. You can drop into the clinics if you don't have an appointment booked, but we encourage people to book so that we can plan and space so people don't have to wait too long and we can have a very organized and smooth clinic.
That's perfect. The link to the schedule also has the online booking number, but I think there's that opportunity if they want to reach out to the community health nurses to really have that discussion about answer any other lingering questions. Mm-hmm.
For sure.
And we have a question about what was it like for you as a nurse to see the vaccine program roll out? So I guess Moderna and this now Pfizer.
You know, I'm going to tear up here because I was just talking with Carrie Curry about this at the very beginning of our planning here. And it was very special. I actually happened to be in Whitehorse the day that the plane arrived with vaccine, and I saw it leave, and it gave me a lot of hope because even though we haven't seen a lot of illness in the Yukon, I know that it's affected many of us. And it's certainly affected my job, but I know that the stressors of the year have been very tough on people. And I'm so happy to see a way out of this. And I'm happy that I can be part of that and provide that to Yukoners across the territory. And I would just say, you know, just let's stick together. There's more, you know, still to come that we have to walk through together, but we can do this, and we're here to support each other for sure.
Yes, and I really want to thank you and all the other frontline health workers for the amount of work and care that over this past 15, feels like forever. So many months of just giving it your all and caring, still sticking it out. It is definitely a game changer for all of us who benefit from your energy and your expertise. So, Kumashish, thank you. I really appreciate it. We do have that toll-free number for anybody that wants to book an appointment. It is 1-877-374-0425. And they will walk you through any of the questions, any of the consent, and book your appointment. So if you, that's another option. You can reach out to your community health nurse or the toll-free number.
Absolutely.
And I don't see any other questions coming up. Was there any other things that you wanted to add?
One thing that people might be asking is, and I touched on this briefly, is when we talk about COVID-19 infection and how kids tend to not be as sick from COVID-19, you know, why do we need to do this? And it's a good question to ask. It's a reasonable question to ask. We know that children can transmit infection. They don't transmit it as often. The sicker a person gets, the more likely they are to transmit infection. However, with the variants, and unfortunately in Canada, we're actually seeing the variant infections become like more center stage. So, and we've seen that in Yukon as well, that our most recent cases were variants. And we know that those actually have become more infectious. They are easier to pass on to others. And so that's going to affect the way that children and youth are seeing COVID-19 infections happen. And so because of that, because there's been probably more kids getting infected, that's why we're seeing a rise in numbers of admissions to hospital in younger people. We've seen more young adults being admitted to ICU than were expected at the beginning of the pandemic. And we think it's a result of just more cases happening in kids. So it is concerning, and the sooner we can get immunized, the more we can tamp down production of variants. And unfortunately, that's a global problem. We're going to need to immunize globally in order to really put the brakes on variant production. So we can do our part in Yukon, our little corner of the globe, to set an example to other communities as well. That this is one way we can work together to not pass on infection to each other at school, but also to keep our elders safe and the rest of our community safe too.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's especially important for our communities where we have young kids living with mom or auntie and uncle and grandma all in the same house. And that transmission makes the risk for grandma even more so. So really, that's a good message to get out there. I do want to stress that people should not be getting their medical advice from TikTok. That is social media. I've been sucked into the TikTok vortex, and some of the stuff that you see on there is pretty crazy. I think it's meant more for entertainment than for information. But I'm not seeing any other questions, so I think we're done. I really want to extend my gratitude for your time today and your expertise, and really keeping everyone calm and answering all those questions that I'm sure many parents have and many students have.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Chief.